Good afternoon. Welcome to our board meeting for Thursday, March 30th for ADA. Craig, would you call one board member?
Mr. Wilkins.
Here. Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Here.
Mr. Kennedy.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Day.
Here.
Mr. Pruitt.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Can you continue with staff and public, please?
All right. As I point to you, please state your name and organization.
John Springsteen, ADA.
And Livingston.
Mark Garrier, BFM.
Mark Davis, ADA.
Jim Hempath, ADA.
Kirsten Isaac, ADA.
Tom Bailey, Custodian.
Craig Peterson, ADA.
Tom Eric, ADA.
Jennifer
Haldane,
ADA.
Mark Myers, Irons.
Mike Hess, ADA.
Joe Beadle, North Rim.
Jason Sweetie, North Rim.
Jared Jude, Department of Law.
Brenda Appleby, ADA.
Bill Anderson. Bill Bailey, ADA.
Do we have any public on the phone?
Yes, this is Tom Sullivan with North Rim Bank.
We have Jamie Spiegel and Dave Wolf with Allen Marine.
Any other public on the phone?
Corinne, this is Gene Terrio with ADA. I'm in the board. I'm in the boardroom with folks in Juneau.
Okay. Any other public?
Thank you, Corinne. We would also have four. Agenda for approval, I would like to make one change. I would like to move item number C, resolution on the extension of the MOU to after the IEP. After the executive session. C would be, and D would be switched.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
As a change. With the change.
Second.
Thank you. All right. We have an agenda in front of us. Item number five, public comments. Anybody in the boardroom wish to make a 3-minute public comment? Anybody on five? Make a 3-minute public comment. Anybody online? All right, hearing none, I'll close public comments. Turn to the board is item number six, our 5 minutes for February 3rd.
Second here.
Thank you. We'll give us a chance to review any edits, clarifications, changes, or more. Minutes, there are no objections. The minutes are approved. That brings us to item number 70, business. Item A is loan resolution L17-01 for Allen Marine.
Item 7A, resolution L1701, regards the purchase by the authority of a participation in a loan to Allen Marine. The loan refinance is debt secured by sightseeing vessels in Southeast Alaska and a floating dock entitled Ketchikan. The dollar amount of aid participation is $12,077,867, and at this time I ask Chris Anderson to present.
Last time I hit my back. Good afternoon. This is a loan participation request from Allen Marine Inc. They are the borrowing entity. There are several closely held guarantors: David C. Allen, Allen Marine Cruises, Alaska Catamaran LLC, DBA Alaska Marine Cruises, Allen Marine Sales and Service LLC, and Allen Marina LLC. The purpose is to refinance debt secured by sightseeing vessels in Southeast Alaska and a floating dock in Tideland, on Tideland to Ketchikan. It will pay off two existing ADA loan participations and increase the participating balance with Allen Marine, ADA's participating balance, by $207,432. As I've indicated, it's a debt consolidation. It's secured by 14 commercial vessels. in regards to economic development, borrowers will benefit by a lowering of the annual debt service by approximately $402,993. That's on all of the debt being refinanced, stabilizing their future debt service. The new loan will reduce the effective interest rate on the debt from 5.54% to 4.20%. There are new jobs being reported. However, Allen Marine does employ over 100 full-time people and workers. And during the summer, they employ an additional 200-plus seasonal employees. Management, in regards to management, Allen Marine Inc. and its affiliates are owned and managed by David Allen. Mr. Allen has been the president CEO since 2010. The management team includes Jamie Cagle as COO with over 20 years in the business, and David Wolf, CPA, as the CFO, both of whom I believe are online. In regards to the collateral, we would take a first preferred marine mortgage on the 14 vessels. Used by the affiliates of Allen Marine.
Hey Chris, so explain to us what a marine mortgage is.
It is.
There's no title action.
It's like, you don't really have titles.
UCC filing?
Yeah, it's like a UCC filing. A preferred marine mortgage, not commercial. It gives you, rights. It's like a mortgage. So it gives you timing rights.
So is it like a car? A car loan? Or is that the similar?
I suppose you could say it's similar.
It's recorded as U.S. Coast Guard on the vessel documentation.
It's a recorded lien.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so recorded lien, is there an ability for the boat owners to put additional liens on? Or someone put additional liens on it? Like second, third, or fourth?
Well,
I don't think they would be recorded on the vessel documentation.
Yeah.
You may be able to do that, but it wouldn't be recorded.
Okay. And typically, additional debt isn't added without our approval of it. So we're putting a second piece of property. They would need our approval. Okay. The Allen Marine Tours uses 12 vessels for watching and wildlife tours, and two of the larger vessels are used for overnight cruises called Alaska Catalan Land, LLC, DBA Last and Dream Tours. Jim Steffen with Norcoast Marine Surveyors inspected and surveyed all of the vessels in October of 2016, which is 30 years. And we have listed out the vessels for you just for general information purposes, giving a collective collateral value of $44,090,000. Our loan to value in this credit would be 48.7%, which is well collateralized. As I indicated, we do have related debt. We have two existing loans participated that total $11,874,35, and both of these loans would be paid off with this subject loan participation. The existing loans are current. They've paid as agreed throughout the inception. No known environmental issues. And the strengths that we saw in this credit are the fact that the borrower is well established. They're profitable. They're the largest whale and wildlife viewing company in Southeast Alaska. Management under Dave Allen is proven and supported by an experienced management team. As I've indicated, we're well collateralized at 48.7%. The debt service coverage, I'll indicate, I don't think it's particularly material, but it says 1.97, it should be 1.9. It's still very good debt service coverage, well above our de minimis. A perceived weakness in this is the Southeast Alaska Tourism is the primary source of revenue for the company, and the financial health of this market is strongly influenced by the national economy. So a weak national economy could potentially have negative effect on Southeast Alaska tourism. We're not concerned about that. We think that the national economy is strong and it's growing, and the tourism business is doing well. In regards to portfolio diversification, these are 2016 numbers. Ada had 4% of its total statewide portfolio secured by vessels. That would increase to 4.1%. In the Southeast region, we were at 14.9%, and that would increase with this credit up to 15.1%. Staff does recommend approval of this request with a couple of conditions. The fact that the lender would have to obtain a subordination and payment standby agreement for all debts tied to the buyout of Rogers and Getty Allen's interest in Alaska Marine Bank and its affiliates, acceptable to ADA, and the lender is to incorporate collateral need provisions acceptable to ADA. Those are fairly standard. With that, I would open it to any questions that you have.
I'm
not good at the
end, so questions
from the
board?
Gary Nelson, Fred?
Not for me, thank you.
Nope, Chris?
I'm fine, thank you.
Chris?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Tom Sullivan with Northrim Bank. I just wanted to make one clarification. You'd mentioned a couple times about a floating dock and
Can we give it a rest for just a minute here? It's up to the board to have questions right now. Thanks.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
We're asking questions to Chris.
I've got a couple questions. What is the individual interest rate from the lending institutions and the blended rate on all of the debts? So, yeah, I have that. Too much information. Okay, what I have is ADA. Oh, here it is, right under me. Thank you, Bill. I know you're looking for it. Okay, that's ADA. You have that hand, Bill? I know I have it. I just have too much documentation.
Weighted average of.
Okay.
Oh, that's the existing data, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's asking overall.
It will be the 5.5.
5.54 is weighted average.
Of the debt that's being refinanced, of all the debt that's being refinanced.
Oh, that's right in front of me.
What portion of that is ADA?
ADA's weighted average is 5.79. On the two loans that they will be paying off. And on.
So the new loan is 5.79 from the old side?
No, that's the weighted average currently.
I'm interested in the new loan.
3.97 on. Pardon me, for ADA.
ADA M.
Is that rate from going down?
Excuse me. Yes, what our current rate would be.
4.5.
Our rate would be going down, yes.
Yeah,
our rate would be going down.
Is that traditional what's going on? Why we're doing that?
Yes.
All right. Other question I have. So I see the appraisal on the vessel, mm-hmm. and the appraisal, some of these vessels are very good, but. Quite expensive. It's a $9 million. Sure, guys. So, when you do an appraisal, do you do it because the markets and whatnot, like what the vessels will depreciate at the market over a 10-year period.
You mean do we look out 10 years?
Yeah, you ask the question from the appraiser. The vessel appraisal, and these vessels in the last 10 years have depreciated X amount. Given the same conditions, would we expect the same thing to happen in the next 10 years? Because it's a 10-year note. I'm just curious if you do stuff like that, whether it's a vessel or anything, what I would call more disposable asset than a fixture like a building.
No, I don't believe that the that the survey goes into that that level of analysis.
So you're comfortable that in 10 years there'll be some, there'll be some assets, and some of them are 10 years old, and they still have quite high asset value.
Mm-hmm. Certainly there's a certain level of depreciation, you know, with any asset like this. I know that it's a 10-year note. I don't know that all vessels will be on that note for 10 years. We've had the two existing loans for a while, and we have released some of those vessels and added vessels, you know, maintaining our loan to value. Our deal with them was that we weren't to get above a 50% loan to value. And if we did get above a 50% loan to value, we would require a VIA guarantee. That was our discussion.
So would you mind, do you hear, not just an investment, but maybe you could call airplanes, whatever, you know, real airlines or flights, planes, whatever those things are. Mm-hmm. To ask that question to appraisals, because it's, you know, they just tend to appreciate a little bit different in my mind than, say, like a
piece of real estate.
Mall or something like that.
Good point. So not that
this didn't happen, but do we require an insurance? The insurance policies, you know, there's a replacement cost versus an appraised cost, and so this operator, do you know what kind of insurance he has? Maybe the operator might want to tell us what if the vessel was to have a problem and disappear.
Mm-hmm.
I have a series of questions to ask about that. But
okay.
The question is, obviously, your note is should be obviously covered by the insurance.
Right.
But there's going to be a loss of business for a finite amount of time, which is revenues and whatnot. I don't know if you carry this, you know, loss of business insurance.
Right.
And then finally, I want to make sure that aid is additionally insured.
Yes.
On the, as you know, every year, not necessarily a loss to aid, but you know, any liabilities.
Right. Yeah. Perhaps, Mr. Wolf, are you on the line? CPA for Alan Green might have more information on their insurance, more than covers.
And,
I'm having a difficult time hearing, there's some background noises. But this is Jamie Cagle. If you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit, and if it's appropriate, to first talk about the trends in the surveys. Over the last 10 years, yes, there has been depreciation on the vessels, but there has also been appreciation in the market, and the appreciation has outpaced the depreciation. It took some years a very nominal amount. However, the trend over time is that the vessels have actually slightly appreciated, outpacing the depreciation in the market. But as far as our insurance, we are currently insured at current survey value.
Okay.
And as far as being named additionally insured, you know, whatever the covenants and the requirements are in the existing fleet mortgage is obviously what we have been doing.
So, Kristen, I assume that'll be in there.
Yeah, typically, because it is a participation, lender is insured, and we are a participant in that loan. So that's the way that it works.
Okay. And then just like curiosity, there are lots of business.
Lots of business insurance. We have purchased some of that. However, lots of business insurance for vessels is based on a specific vessel. And with the number of vessels we have, you would have to know which vessel is going to have a loss of business event. And so we have been purchasing some on some of our overnight vessels because obviously there's a limited number of them and the economic impact is larger. However, there's almost always a fairly long waiting period before that insurance comes into effect, and that could be upwards of 60 days. Well, on a 120-day season, operating season, the 60-day you know, basically deductible, can sometimes make it cost prohibitive. Is that clear enough? Or?
Yeah. Okay. How many of the vessels are overnight?
Currently, in our fleet, we have 5 overnight vessels.
Okay. Those are my questions. Any questions? More questions from the board?
Gary's fine.
Well, does someone like to move the resolution?
So moved. Second.
Thank you. Resolution 17-19.
Right. Mr. Chair, Tom Sullivan from Northland Bank had wanted to explain about the floating dock part of this, and I don't know if anybody cares about it or not. But,
okay.
This would be an opportunity for that.
Tom, are you still
with us? Yes, I am. Thank you. And again, my apologies for interjecting prematurely. The collateral for the loan is the vessels alone. There, I heard mention of the floating dock, but that had been not been discussed with the borrower as part of the collateral package.
Thank you.
So the question was an ask. Then would you pull forward?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Then Commissioner Faraday.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Barnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Day.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And so that's item number 2. Resolution G17-02.
Department of Assistant Secretary to see if all the corporations are in there. So, item 17, resolution G17-02, retitles the Office of the Deputy Director of Financial Operations to be the Office of the Chief Financial Officer, appoints Brendan Applegate as Chief Financial Officer of the Authority, and further appoints Brendan Applegate as Assistant Secretary / Treasurer of the Authority, as Michael Lamb is now the Executive Director of the Energy Authority, and Brendan Applegate was selected as his successor in the Chief Financial Officer role. This action is necessary to transition responsibilities.
All right, so why don't we put the resolution before us, and then we'll discuss it.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to approve resolution number G17-02.
Thank you. Discussion? Fred, Gary, Russell?
Good to go. Oh,
we're good.
Thank you. Gary, fine.
Okay. Bring no discussion. Bring when you pull the board.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Mr. Commissioner Faraday.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Day.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And now with the agenda change, we're going to go to the IEP update.
All right. And for the IEP update, I'd ask Gene Terrio to present and call on others as needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if I could have Mark Gardner and Dan Britton come to the table to add to the comments that I will make. Just to use the format under which we report information to the legislature to start off with IEP components on the gas supply. Dan represents ADA and the on the IEP gas negotiations and FMG. He's been part of the team with IGU. IGU took over the lead of the gas supply negotiations in January. With the forward movement that we had on signing the MOU with IGU. I think much of the discussion really needs to take place in executive session because there are pending term sheets and negotiations going on right now with regards to the gas supply. We have not secured, or the team has not secured the gas supply yet, but Mr. Britton may be able to supply more information. But again, due to the sensitive nature of the negotiations and the pricing of the commodity that will likely have to take place in the executive session. For the LNG plant expansion, the only thing that I want to cover on this is during the legislative session and after the MOU was signed, it indicated to different vendors that there was a real intent to continue to expand the capacity of LNG available to the interior Alaska. That did bring out a number of vendors who pinged the project. I just want to let you know that as those vendors have reached out to me, or when legislators have reached out to me with different ideas, I have funneled that information to Mr. Britton so that he can contact them to see if there is any suggestion of a technology that would improve the price with which we're looking to produce and deliver LNG up into the interior. On the transportation, if I could just have Dan perhaps touch on the use of the larger trailers in the transportation fleet, and also any recent conversation he's had with the railroad after they did their successful test with the shipping of LNG via ISO containers last fall.
Dan?
Sure. The larger trailer continues that we purchased earlier this year continues to be used on a daily basis and is working well. The three trailers that we have ordered are scheduled for delivery in the June, July, August time frame. We'll receive one at a time.
So Dan, what's the lag time place order to delivery?
It's about 6 months. A little over 6 months for each. As soon as those units come, as soon as we receive those, they'll be put in service. We'll use the larger capacity trailers as our primary fleet as much as possible. I don't recall if I shared that the original intent was to replace 5 leased units with the new purchases. We were able to work out a deal whereby we acquired those leased units instead of returning them to the lessor, and at a really good favorable pricing structure, pretty close to avoided shipping costs. And so that allows us to keep additional trailers in our fleet for backup in an emergency situation. So that worked out well. And so we look forward to getting the new trailers in the fleet and further reducing the incremental cost of the transportation. As far as the work with the railroad, we continue to have discussions on a fairly regular basis. The challenge right now is to identify a location where we can transload the ISO containers if we decide to move forward with the rail that results in saving. So moving the ISO container from a Point McKenzie facility, Anchorage, loading into Anchorage, and then that didn't result in savings to the as compared to using trailers. So there is an opportunity to potentially do that in Houston, or in an area, generally in that area, in Big Lake. And that would reduce some of the handling costs.
But you got to, unless they bring it to the Fairbanks Railroad, you got to handle it again. Are they willing to bring it, because there's a spur at the LNG plant? Are they willing to bring it there?
There's a spur at our LNG storage facility number 2.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they'd look at whether or not we would take delivery of ISO containers there.
So you truck it again?
Right now, that's the option.
So you just truck it all the way and knock out the
three. Yeah. So that's why we haven't jumped on ordering a bunch of ISO containers to start using them on the rail. It requires some further work to optimize before we decide that that's the direction we're going to take in the long term with transportation.
If they finish the rail on the Point McKenzie project, is that just close?
We're within a half a mile of the rail bed. The Titan plant is within half a mile of the rail bed that has been laid.
You know what, was there close for a spur for half a mile without the cost?
I think there, when Salix had looked at some numbers, I think it was around $10 million.
For half a mile?
That's the number that, but that also included the in-plant rail work that was required to be able to stage the containers and circle them out. I might be wrong on recalling that number, and that was somebody else's. I've never looked at the number, but
I know that he's had ongoing conversations with the railroad and wanted the board members to appreciate that. We're excited that the railroad is looking for ways that it can lower its cost to help long-term with all the extra handling. It doesn't pencil out right now, but we continue to be work very closely with them and be very, very responsive to them. Then on the storage, at this point, I don't believe anything has moved forward. Of course, expanding the storage right now is contingent on putting together the consolidation deal with IGU. And so the next thing on my agenda is the utility consolidation. Just to let you know that we did, of course, have a target date to have the package, the suite of contracts, loan documents, done by the end of this month, so that is tomorrow. We are not, of course.
Dean?
Yes.
So you said that the storage is contingent on IGU?
Well, at this point, the plan would be that under the consolidated utilities, the financing tools that are available then would be used by IGU to do the storage expansion. We're still moving forward. Under the thought.
That happened. But correct me if I'm wrong, if that didn't happen, the storage would still go forward.
That would be a decision for the ADA board, certainly. If that consolidation doesn't go forward, then would we move forward under an FNG structure to make that happen? So that is a potential future decision.
And we'd have to have that, correct me if I'm wrong, to serve the 3,000 or 4,000 customers that have a pipe in the ground that's waiting ready for it.
Expanded storage in some form.
Yes.
The 5 million gallon tank that we've been working on developing for a number of years is the right project in the long term. There are other ways to do it, but expanded storage certainly needs to be part of the project.
Right. Thank you.
I just want to ask this. But could I follow up on that, please?
Go ahead, Gary.
So, Gina, are they under the impression that they are going to be responsible for initiating and building the storage, or do they know that we have the option and that we're under some sort of timeline that we have to, for the want of a better word, pull the trigger on storage sooner than later?
Well, Gary, they're certainly unaware of the deadline to have storage in place to qualify, potentially qualify for the credit. IBU certainly is knows that we've got to make decisions on serving our existing customer base under a gas supply, and there certainly is a desire to put gas in the pipes, extra pipe capacity to serve more customers. And so, yes, I believe IGU knows that all those decisions right now we're counting on moving forward under the consolidated utility structure. However, if that doesn't happen, then it would tee up decisions for ADA to make under the banner of FNG, the Pendex Assets, on how to move forward to still capture, utilize financial tools and still capture some of those things like the storage credit for the benefit of the Fairbanks, sure, North Star Borough customers.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So they're aware of it. That's what I really wanted to know. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, sorry for talking over you there. Under the utility consolidation, of course, we're not making the deadline by tomorrow, and so the board does have a pending resolution that would extend that out to the end of April. We have the financing, or the drafting team has been working very diligently. We have a weekly meeting, a phone call for the folks on the ADA side. At this point, we have developed the suite of documents and handed them off to IGU for their review and comment back. They have had the purchase and sale agreement for some time. Other documents were delivered to them more recently, but we've been working the team pretty hard to make sure that we have transmitted everything over for IGU and their legal team to take a shot at any suggested modifications. The primary point of contact is our contractor, Catherine Black. So we did want to make sure that we had a limited control over how the documents were being finalized and then transmitted to the IGU side, and Catherine Black is that point of contact. On our side, Mr. Jude has been very involved, Mark Gardner and Dan Britton, and myself, just providing a little bit more just oversight. We also have had ADA staff involved with the North Slope pad. Of course, that would be part of the overall deal, and we have transmitted documents to that IGU side to take a look at as far as how the pad would be proposed to be transferred over as part of the overall package. And with that, I think I'll take a pause and ask Mark Gardner. Mark, you think there's anything else that we need to convey as far as the package being negotiated on our side and transmitted over?
No, Gene, I think you covered it. I would just give the board the dates. We sent the draft of the purchase and sale agreement on February 16th. And the draft of the financing agreement on March 21st. Those are the two core documents. There's a list of about 20, but most of them are opinions of lawyers and things like that. So those are the two primary documents.
Yeah. So the second major one was transmitted over fairly recently. Then just on distribution, you did hear in your AEA portion of your meeting today that the PACE legislation, which could be a very helpful component for incenting expanded use in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, is pending in the Senate Rules Committee. I know the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce recently wrote a letter to Senate President Pete Kelly urging that that not be left at the finish line this year. At this point, I'm not too concerned. There is always a little bit of back and forth negotiation between the House and Senate on passing, taking final action on each other's legislation. The real focus right now is getting Senate bills out of Senate over to the House, House bills transmitted over to the Senate. And so sometime here within the next week to 10 days, I believe they will negotiate on when they will start then taking final action on each other's bills. the PACE legislation is a House bill. It's currently in the Senate Rules Committee, so it just requires final Senate action and then a concurrence vote in the House. We've been working very closely with the House prime sponsor of the bill so that when it comes back over, we'll be able to move quickly to get House concurrence in the Senate changes. The other item that is potentially beneficial just with regards to incentivizing conversions is an on-bill financing mechanism. It's our legal review that right now the two Fairbanks gas utilities already do have the latitude to offer on-bill financing as part of their tariff structure. But there is also an interest in the legislature of clarifying the state statutes to make it clear that any utility, even if it's RCA regulated, would be able to offer such financing. That financing has some of the same attributes as PACE financing, and there is a member of the House that is considering dropping in legislation on that. And then finally, you had some discussion in your AEA portion on the Volkswagen settlement funds. As you had explained to you, that it really is focused on reducing emissions from engines. However, as those monies come into the state, I certainly would be encouraging the Fairbanks North Star Borough to consider whether changing over their bus fleet to natural gas. If, in fact, the consolidation goes through, their combined utility will own a natural gas filling station in Fairbanks. And so they may be able to access some of those VW funds. But there's a competition for use of those funds in their changing over their bus fleet, and that would help with increasing demand within the Fairbanks North Star Borough. So that concludes all the components of my update on the IEP.
Thank you, Gene. Questions? Gary, any questions?
Dana, I just want to let you know, the board know, Gene gave me a draft of a one-page primer on the responsibilities of the board to set rates. That's what we've talked about the last few meetings. So it is a draft piece, and I like it. It's simple, it's straightforward. It sets out their responsibilities. And Gene, thanks, and Mark, thanks for putting that together. And I look forward to that being part of the packet that's now under negotiation. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could just touch on that, that is one of the documents, one of the sort of lesser, although important component that we want to see in the overall utility consolidation suite of documents. But since all of those things still are in negotiation, I didn't feel that it was appropriate to have the actual wording. There may actually be ongoing negotiations over some of the components of that wording.
I have a question, my interior, Dan. So I want to kind of relate it to Facebook legislation. So conversions, obviously it's very important that people have the ability to convert, and it could be an economic stress for them. And so where are we at on the ability to facilitate, a less painful cost of the conversions, dollars available, maybe run loans or something through an institution, a local institution or something for these folks? Or that doesn't work, FNG, some way, somehow, homeowners with probably a mortgage on their house can be able to at least finance or do something to get a conversion. So where are we on that? Because that's pretty important. If they can't afford to, or they don't see a path forward to upgrade their furnaces, now where are our options? And I would assume we're going down a path regardless of the integration, because that's a very, whether it's us or IGU, which we hope is IGU, that's handled. So is someone handling that? Is that being done?
Mr. Chairman, if I could weigh in on that, the IGU and actually the IEP team a while ago, established a conversion working group in the interior, really led by IGU. We anticipate that it's an activity that really takes place at the local level, but what we, ADA, AEA, committed to was to help them get any legislative legislation that was needed in place, and so that's why we have been working so closely with them on passage of the PACE legislation. The PACE legislation really is an assistance tool that is only available to commercial properties. That is important, though, for the overall enterprise, because the bulk of those commercial properties are within the FMG service territory, light industrial, multifamily, residential, 4 units and above, or above 4 units. But that represents bulk users, larger users. Most of them, because of the expansion of the distribution system that's already taken place in the Fairbanks Natural Gas service territory, have pipe in the streets in front of them. We're now working on getting gas in those pipes. We have found some different potential sources of federal funds that the local government could access that would be able to be loaned out, with a PACE mechanism being the repayment mechanism that lowers the risk of defaults, makes the loan seamlessly transferable to a new business owner. All things that have shown to be very attractive to a borrower across the nation, and that's why PACE as a mechanism is picking up steam all across the country. As I mentioned, on-bill financing mechanism has many of those same attributes, but would be more available to individual residential customers. Some of the funding sources that we've identified, federal funds, I believe would be able to be made available for that kind of a lending, and then that repayment mechanism, which is a voluntary addition that goes onto your utility bill. It stays with the property until that obligation is paid off. So just like the PACE, it's transferable if the residence is sold to a new owner. That's a very attractive attribute to an existing residential property owner. If they believe they're going to live in the house for the next 6 years, but the obligation to pay off the conversion of the furnace is being stretched out over a 10-year period, an on-bill financing mechanism to make that transfer seamless, just like a PACE obligation is transfers seamlessly if the commercial property is sold. The strength of those repayment mechanisms lowers the risk of default. If you have lower risk of default, you would expect to be able to bring in lower cost capital. And some of the potential federal sources that we have identified count on those repayment mechanisms being in place to lower the risk of default on the loans.
So, Gene, if I had a duplex or a fourplex or an eightplex or a warehouse or something, and I have the ability to convert to natural gas, LNG, but I want to do an energy upgrade. I want to insulate the roof better. I want to put in floor heat. I want to do a whole bunch of stuff. And the furnace part is a portion of the upgrade that I plan on doing. So does it take two separate would it take two separate facilities in order to get that done, one for the furnace and one for the upgrades I want to do? Or would there be ability for a commercial operator going to a lending institution, a credit union, a bank, and say, I want to do a $100,000 upgrade to my facility, my commercial building, part of it, $10 or $15 is the furnace. What does the owner do?
Mr. Chairman, both the PACE mechanism and an on-bill mechanism are energy efficiency improvement funding mechanisms. Converting to natural gas from fuel oil, because the appliances generally are more fuel efficient, qualifies as an energy efficiency step under that umbrella. So you can, in fact, do, you know, change out the windows, add insulation, all of those things, and then a subunit of all that work is changing out the heat. And in fact, doing those things maybe helps you. You might not be able to show as much of an economic return just swapping out the heat plant, but if you also add additional insulation, you get so much of a gain there that that might actually help cover part of the cost of the heat source swap out. But those mechanisms are for energy efficiency. The swap out of the heat plant would just be one of the things that would qualify under that umbrella lending.
And would the utility, whichever one it is, service these loans?
A PACE mechanism actually is repaid through a voluntary extra assessment. It's like a water or sewer assessment on your property tax, and therefore that bill, you're basically borrowing or piggybacking on that property tax bill that gets issued to the property owner and that relationship every year. And so it would really sort of be serviced by the issuance of that bill, the local government collecting all taxes and assessments that are owed, and then handing that money, that extra assessment, off to a local lender, if that's who they're working with as a source of money, or to the utility, if the utility accessed federal funds or something else, or under a PACE mechanism, the local government can actually issue bonds to come up with a pool of money to do the lending, and they would just be doing, collecting the money to basically pay back the bonds that they've issued. There's a lot of flexibility. Those are decisions really that would be made at the local level between the utility working with the local government.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Any more IEPG?
I'm sorry?
Is there any more at the IEP?
No, I'm sure a number of the members will have questions when we get to executive session on the status and content of the negotiations right now for the consolidation. But I think that's all that we've got for public discussion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Gene, was there any specific impetus that came out of the EPA's visits to Fairbanks in the last 3 weeks regarding air quality and conversion in this project?
The EPA was in Fairbanks just recently, Region 10, and they may have had somebody from headquarters in D.C. also. They've been watching this project very closely. The last time that they were in town, which probably about 6 months ago, I gave them the update. So anytime they do come into town, working with the local DEC office and borough air quality office, they want an update on the IEP. The last one, because I was in Juneau, Jomo Stewart, on behalf of IGU and the IEP in general, gave the update. But they're watching it carefully. The borough has some information that indicates, if we get even the slower conversion rate and uptake of natural gas, how that helps the air quality issue.
Thank you. Dean, how did your hearing go with Senate Resources? Did you report that and I missed it?
That is actually tomorrow afternoon. Jomo and I are in communication with each other on the slide packet to be used. We're not duplicating each other. We really are using a recent slide packet that he used in Fairbanks to give an update to a community group. And so he will be in town tomorrow. It's tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 where we are giving that update. And I am also reviewing a draft of our next quarterly IEP report that is due to the legislature. The quarter ends, of course, tomorrow, and so the target for delivery to the legislature of that report will be sometime mid to late next week.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right, we'll close out IEP update. That brings us to item D, executive section. Sir, I'll turn to the motion.
I move that the board enter in the executive session to discuss confidential financial information related to the Interior Energy Project, Mustang Operations Center, and strategy and performance.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Fred, we're doing it here.
You guys go in here. We're going to disconnect the public line, open up the executive session line, and I'll just say that.
Okay.
Fred?
Yes.
Great. Okay, so Fred, while you were trying to dial in and we were watching you, we went ahead and put the resolution, which is G1703, is on the table. No one is elected to discuss. Would you like to do any discussion on it?
No, sir. I'm ready to vote.
Ready to vote. So, Fred, would you call the board, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Hi.
Deputy Commissioner Faraday.
Hi.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick. Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carried.
You got a cheer. Fortunately, I'll be wrong. Yes. Okay. Alright, so that has been that resolution extended, that's been extended to MOU for 3 days. Director's comments.
Okay. So the loan dashboards and reports, development project matrices, and project staff sheets are available for your review. The continuing education calendar, if board members are interested in attending a course, please contact Sherry Severson. And the next ADA board meeting is scheduled for Thursday, April 20th, 2017 at 8 o'clock.
Okay, and how about the infrastructure development project?
I believe, that should be available for your review as well.
Okay. Thank you. All right, that brings us to item 9, board comments.
Mr. Chairman, is it Gary?
I got Dan up first, Gary, if you don't mind.
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
So very briefly, Mr. Chairman, the audit subcommittee met with the CFO in an audit planning meeting on March 15th. Mr. Wilkins was present, and Mr. Faraday, I'm sorry we couldn't include you in on that 2 o'clock meeting. My apologies for that.
No worries.
The audit committee really has three objectives at this point: be involved in the budget process, to have a direct line of communication with our independent auditors that report directly to the board of directors, and then lastly, the audit subcommittee wants to be involved in the draft of the audited financial statements before they're submitted to the entire board of directors. So that's our objectives. I believe our next meeting is in November, and we are cognizant of trying to minimize the bureaucracy while enhancing the internal control, climate, and culture of the organization. Any questions?
Regarding Dan, I appreciate the committee's efforts in leading it. Any comments on Dan's report? Gary, go ahead.
Thanks, Dana. And thank you all for allowing me to call in today. I appreciate it. And to that end, and I apologize again. Somehow I got my meeting schedules messed up, so next month I had it up to 27th, my fault. So we don't have to do anything now, but if it would be possible to move it to the 27th, I would certainly appreciate it because I won't be in the state on the 20th. So I'll just offer that up. If it works, Dana, great. If not, I'll call in on the 20th and attend by teleconference. It's your call, and we don't have to decide now. So thank you. Other than that, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Further comments? Elaine, Jerry, Fred?
Mr. Chairman, I just have two quick things. One was in the context of the resolution we just adopted that our partners at IGU understand the need to continue to drive diligently to finalize those agreements, and also that we continue to work to secure the necessary gas supply given the impending deadlines for gas supply with our existing customers. We're moving into a critical phase in these activities, and I just wanted to note it. Thank you.
Thanks, Fred. I appreciate you putting that on the record. I do concur, and I'd like to add my name to those comments.
Mr. Chairman, as would I, Fred. Thank you.
Okay.
start with my brief comments are it's been a long day for both meetings today. I would like to thank everybody for soldiering through it. And feedback and good comments, good questions, good things to visit about as a teacher. I'd like to thank the staff for putting this together. Look forward to meeting again on the 20th or 27th, depending on what everybody's pleasure is. So, at the end of the day, I want to have a good evening. Thank you to the staff. With that, I'll take a motion for adjournment.
Second.
Oh, third.